Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
It's the Media Buzz Meter with Howard Kurtz.
There is only one story number one, and it's the utter chaos that has engulfed America's college campuses. Nearly 1,000 arrests yesterday, but the epicenter of all this is Columbia University, where I went to journalism school. And just to set the scene, remind you that Columbia had set a 2 p.m. deadline yesterday for the protesters to leave or face suspension. Deadline came, deadline went, no action. Late yesterday, Columbia said it had started imposing suspensions, but that means if you're suspended, you're not allowed to be on campus. So they needed some way to get them off campus. Instead, the president, Manoush Shafiq, did nothing. And I don't understand it. She seems paralyzed. She seems unable to act. I can't imagine, once the dust settles, that she can survive in that job or whether she should survive in that job. So what happened overnight is, because Columbia couldn't even take a step toward enforcing its own rules, the protesters, feeling emboldened, loving the media attention, set up barricades and occupied a building, Hamilton Hall. I must have passed Hamilton Hall 1,000 times. They had walked around the campus shouting "Free Palestine," and about a dozen of them went inside, but hundreds were blocking the entrance using bike locks and their own presence there. So there's no other way to put it. Columbia has lost total control of its own campus. In fact, urged everyone not to show up today. So this subset of anti-Israel, anti-Semitic, pro-Hamas demonstrators are in charge. They're running the asylum, all because of a politically correct refusal to call in the police. So now the NYPD has been called in, but as I'm speaking to you, they are standing outside the campus, which has big black gates up on West 116th Street in Manhattan. And look, the New York Police Department is trained for these kinds of situations. They know how to handle these things. They could use tear gas. There are lots of ways. If you look at all these other schools, many of these other schools that have been conducting these arrests, they've been able to get this subset of a minority off into buses and paddy wagons and arrest them. Now, usually they're released hours later, but at least they're off the campus. The pro-Palestinian protesters are now in charge at Columbia. And I have a whole column on this on Fox News. And what I say is college campuses are the new southern border. This is where the action is. Not just the action, but the breakdown of order at these elite institutions that once commanded our respect and now are paragons of cowardice. So there have been arrests at NYU, at Yale, at USC, at the University of Texas at Austin, where Governor Greg Abbott has called in state troopers. And it all plays out in front of the television cameras. Now, remember when Mike Johnson, the House Speaker, knowing that he would be heckled, sort of created a moment by visiting Jewish students at Columbia and addressing the media mob? President Biden should have gone there first. The White House keeps saying, Biden, he's denounced campus anti-Semitism. But he hasn't really in a meaningful way. The only time the president has said anything on camera is those literally two hard-to-hear sentences in response to a reporter's shouted question. Everything else is like the deputy press secretary putting out statements. Now, I get it. The politics of the Israel-Hamas war are very treacherous for Biden. He knows how to get in front of the cameras when he wants to. You know, I mean, the polls showing like 80% of younger voters disapprove of his handling of the war. The left wing of his party, led by the Squad, are, you know, Israel is committing genocide. And yeah, Israel, you know, look, let me just say a couple of quick things before I go on with this analogy. I believe in free speech. I believe in peaceful protests. Peaceful protests are not setting up a tent encampment, violating school rules, making it hard for everybody else to get around, intimidating Jewish students, harassing them, shouting things like, Tel Aviv, burn it to the ground, and all of these other hateful slogans. So the politics are not good for Biden. But Joe Biden could have had a sister soldier moment. Sister Soldier was an activist. This is back in the 1992 campaign. And after the LA riots, she said, if black people kill black people every day, why not have a week and kill white people? Bill Clinton, running for president, speaking to Jesse Jackson's Rainbow Coalition, denounced her. He said, if you took the words white and black and you reversed them, you might think David Duke was giving the speech. And where was Columbia when this protest leader, Kaimani James, in January, met with university officials and said, and had this on video, Zionists don't deserve to live. I feel very comfortable calling for those people to die. You know what the university did? They covered it up. They didn't do anything to the guy, and they didn't make it public. What do you have to do to get kicked out of Columbia University? Very comfortable calling for them to die. So now, once it surfaced last week, of course, Columbia put out statements. This is terrible. This is horrible. This is unacceptable. They covered it up. And then we get to the double standard here. Does anyone think that if a student called for blacks to be killed or gays to be killed, don't you think that person would be gone in an instant? This is a blatant double standard. Kaimani later issued kind of a non-apology saying he respects life, but accusing Israel of genocide. And another thing that has been chanted at Columbia or elsewhere, is that the October 7th atrocities, remember the killing of grandmothers and grandfathers and children and babies and capturing of hostages, civilian hostages. October 7th will happen not 10 more times, not 100 more times, not 1,000 more times, but 10,000 times. Now, USC has canceled its graduation. And, you know, Columbia is infamous for the protests of 1968 when extremist elements of those protesting the Vietnam War engaged in violence and, in fact, took over a building and held, I think, an administrator or official hostage. But there are now echoes of today. So I want to look at a couple of the stories in the papers yesterday. Washington Post says Donald Trump and other Republicans are seizing on the eruption of campus protests to depict the United States as out of control under President Biden. Beyond the disruption, the paper says top Republicans have highlighted the anti-Semitic chants that have occurred in some of the protests. The issue is complicated by a debate over what constitutes anti-Semitism and when Israel crosses this line. Well, some student organizers have denounced the chants or said they are coming from outside activists. Now, come on. I can't even believe these sentences. The issue is not complicated. These are not just chants, which is how it's being portrayed in this story. It's perfectly clear what anti-Semitism is. What the virulent harassment of Jewish students is. And Trump, again, back to the Post story, has cited the protests to accuse Biden and Democrats of being unable to maintain order. Now, I think that's a fair criticism. Of course, former president has a little baggage when he talks about law and order. His criminal trial in the hush money case. Okay, so now here's a New York Times story. It looks at Biden's party, saying the protests are exposing fresh tensions within the Democratic Party over how to balance free speech protections and support for Gazans with concerns that some Jewish Americans are raising about anti-Semitism. Right, this just drove me insane. Support for Gazans is really support for Hamas, absolute terrorist group that launched this war. And that isn't to say that there can't be sympathy that I share for the rising death toll in Gaza, especially among civilian families, and the growing hunger crisis, and the aid to ordinary Gazans, some of which unfortunately is stolen by Hamas, absolutely has to increase. But this, some Jewish Americans are raising concerns about anti-Semitism. It's insulting to your intelligence. Most Americans, remember, Jews are 2% of the population in the U.S. Most Americans share their anxiety about this spreading poison. You don't have to be Jewish to reject Hamas and its unspeakable tactics that caused the largest one-day death toll of Jews since the Holocaust. And the idea that this is, oh, they're objecting to chance. Back to the New York Times. To some lawmakers who have visited encampments and attended demonstrations, the students are part of a long tradition of campus activism, and their free speech rights are at risk. Incidents of anti-Semitism, they say, do not reflect the broader movement, including many young progressive Jews. That's right. A long tradition of campus activism. Not Zionists don't deserve to live. So things may change by the time you hear this. But police forces across the country have managed to make hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of arrests, but not Columbia, which did it a couple of weeks ago and then just went totally passive. Manoush Shafiq may have the support of her faculty. And by the way, some faculty members have been involved in these protests at Columbia and elsewhere. They work for the university. I don't see how they're able to hold on to their jobs. Now, there's an incident at USC where a Jewish student, this is all captured on video, wants to go to his class. And he's blocked by about half a dozen pro-Palestinian demonstrators. And he says, look, I just need to go this way. I just need to get to my class. And they won't, they're blocking him. They will not let him attend class at the University of Southern California, and there's a security guard right there, standing right there, and he does nothing. Now here's David Friedman, who was Trump's ambassador to Israel, He posted this. Could just one Ivy League president make the following statement to his or her students? By law, you can say almost anything you want. And by law, we can decide who gets to study at our university. Those of you who believe that rape, torture, kidnapping, and murder of innocent people is okay are not aligned with our values. Therefore, we are telling you to leave. In effect, we are expelling you. In the Republican House, the Rules Committee advanced a bill attempting to codify anti-Semitism. The Democrats, led by Jerry Nadler, said this was deeply flawed. This bill threatens to chill constitutional free speech. Again, it's really not that difficult to make a distinction between free speech, peaceful protests, even people who are shouting the most hateful things, protected by the Constitution, and stopping a student from going to class, harassing, intimidating, setting up encampments that block access to the campus, or at least tents, and of course, taking over a building. I don't know, is that free speech?
Hey, let's pause right there. The buzz meter continues right after this.
The world of business moves fast. Stay on top of it with the Fox Business Rundown. Listen to the Fox Business Rundown every Monday and Friday at foxbusinesspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
Story two, Donald Trump's hush money trial back in action today, and there was news right out of the box. Judge Juan Merchan ruling, not a shock, I must say, against the former president for violating his gag order. He fined him $9,000. There were 10 accusations by prosecutors of Trump violating the gag order, and 9 out of 10, $1,000 each, you know, was the judge's ruling. You know, this is walking around money for Donald Trump. But he continues, or has continued, to criticize the gag order as muzzling him in the middle of the campaign and feeling it was another sign of unfairness by the judge. Now, Judge Merchan ordered Trump to remove every post that was found, the 9 different instances where he was found to violate the gag order. And he warned him of incarcerary punishment. In other words, if you continue to do this, you could wind up in jail. Now, I don't think, unless Donald Trump, you know, punches out a juror, that that's going to happen. And not even then, because it would give Trump something to cite an appeal if he's convicted. And, you know, public sympathy for the former president would skyrocket. Even among those who don't particularly like him, you know, if you have any doubts about the gag order, even if you think the gag order is exactly what's needed, I don't see Trump behind bars at this point. Now, there was important testimony to start the day from Gary Farrow, who was Michael Cohen's former banker. And it's going to make for fodder when Cohn, who's already a disbarred lawyer, who's already served time in jail, including for lying, takes the stand. But there was documentation, which is what made it strong. So Farrell was the guy who was picked to represent the banks that were dealing with Donald Trump's then lawyer and fixer. And when Cohen went to Farrow and said, you know, I'm making these payments. This is the payment money, the $130,000 that wound up going to Stormy Daniels' lawyer. And Farrow testified that there was no indication that he got that these payments were related to a political candidate. That, he said, might have required additional scrutiny. So Cohen transferred the money to his from his home equity line, set up this account, and Farrow also said there was no indication that it was related to someone in the adult film industry. It is not an industry we do work with, Farrow said. So actually the money went from this account that was called Essential Consultants to Stormy's lawyer, Keith Davidson, who had set up his own account on behalf of his client. Cohen listed it as, quote, retainer, which it was not. And so there were emails back and forth documenting all this, emails that were said to be of high importance. So this is providing the paper trail and the indication from Cohen's former banker that he was given false information. He didn't know it involved a political candidate. He didn't know it involved a porn star. Now, on cross-examination by Trump lawyer Todd Blanche, who, by the way, Trump is reported to be very frustrated with not being more aggressive, more on that tomorrow. Gary Farrow admitted that the banks he worked for are paying for his lawyers. Interesting. Whenever he dealt with Cohen, the witness testified, 90% of the time, it was an urgent matter. He said, Cohen is an aggressive guy, not easy if you're not firm with him. He likes that word, firm. Cohen said to him, according to this testimony, he was not, quote, acting as an agent of anyone when he opened this account of money that was destined for Stormy Daniels. Well, that's just a lie. He was acting as an agent of someone. Farrow saying, look, I would not have opened this account if I knew it was a shell company and not an operating business. And that's what it was, a shell company didn't make this payment. Quote, it would give me pause, very frankly. So without using any, you know, incendiary language, I mean, he took apart much of what Cohen represented to him. And with these emails, many of which were labeled high importance, it was damaging, I think, to Michael Cohen. But remember, Michael Cohen is not on trial. He may be a key witness, but Donald Trump is on trial. And they didn't get into the extent to which Donald Trump did or did not know about the mechanics of Cohen's payment. And ultimately, remember, what's charged here to be illegal and was kind of upgraded or stretched from a misdemeanor to felony is Trump's own falsified expense payments to justify this money, at least in the earlier case of Karen McDougal, maybe not so much in Stormy. And by the way, after several weeks of media observations that no one from Trump's family was there to support him, Eric Trump, his son, showed up and was in the courtroom. Meanwhile, a CNN poll has Donald Trump up by 6. Now, I know it's a national poll and the only polls that count are battleground states, but given there's kind of a spate of polls that seem to show Biden closing the gap and either being tied with Trump in battleground states or ahead. Now comes the CNN poll. Trump is on the cover of Time magazine with the headline, If He Wins. The Time reporter was able to interview him for an hour at Mar-a-Lago, as I did. He asked about all of the former Trump officials who now criticize him and say he's unfit for the presidency. I let them quit, he said, because I have a heart. I don't want to embarrass anybody. I don't think I'll do that again. From now on, I'll fire. Although we pretty much got, I think, that people who said they were resigning have been fired. So what is he going to do in the second term? Carry out a deportation operation designed to remove more than 11 million people from the country. Willing to build migrant detention camps and deploy the U.S. military both at the border and inland. He would let red states monitor women's pregnancies and prosecute those who violate abortion bans. So just to be clear, he's not calling for this. He's saying it's up to the states. He would, at his personal discretion, withhold funds appropriated by Congress, according to his top advisors. He'd be willing to fire a U.S. attorney who doesn't carry out his order to prosecute someone, breaking with a tradition of independent law enforcement that dates from America's founding. He's weighing pardons for every one of his supporters accused of attacking the Capitol on January 6th, 800 of whom have pleaded guilty or been convicted. He might not come to the aid of an attacked ally in Europe or Asia. This is as if the NATO countries aren't paying their own defense. So a lot of this has been out in various forms, but here is Trump, in most cases, saying it. He would gut the U.S. Civil Service, deploy the National Guard to American cities if he sees fit. Well, that has happened before. Dwight Eisenhower, Little Rock, 1957. He's the same guy with the same goals and grievances this time. He might fire U.S. attorneys, saying it depends on the situation. He's told supporters he would seek retribution against his enemies. He's since walked that back, but it's an open question. What about Fannie Willis? What about Alvin Bragg? Trump says, should they be prosecuted? No, I don't want to do that, he said. We're going to look at a lot of things. He vowed to appoint a real special prosecutor. He has vowed to appoint a real special prosecutor to go after Biden. Now he says, I wouldn't want to hurt Biden. I have too much respect for the office. But then he says Biden's fate could be tied to an upcoming Supreme Court ruling. The hearing was the other day on absolute presidential immunity. If they say a president doesn't get immunity, then Biden, I am sure, will be prosecuted for all his crimes. And what's pointed out here is that Biden hasn't been charged with any crimes, and a House Republican effort to impeach him did not unearth any evidence of crimes. Meanwhile, kind of a falling out now between Donald Trump and Carrie Lake, who's going to win the Republican nomination in Arizona for the Senate. Since she's jumped into the race, Trump has repeatedly expressed skepticism about her political prospects. He's shown annoyance with her frequent presence at his Florida resort, according to five people close to him. So this was put out deliberately by the Trump camp. At one point, after grumbling for months that she was at Mar-a-Lago too often, Trump gently suggested to Lake that she should leave the club and hit the campaign trail in Arizona. Trump has asked others if she can really win in Arizona and if she might drag down his own poll numbers. So none of this has happened publicly, but Trump's frustration with Lake has only increased over the past year. All but ruled her out as a VP pick, not surprisingly in light of this. He believes she lost the 2022 gubernatorial race in Arizona, despite the fact that it was winnable. She didn't win, he told one ally over dinner. And Trump's advisors were furious when a Lake ally released a recording of the then Arizona Republican chairman, Jeff DeWitt, encouraging her to stay out of the Senate race. And that guy had to resign. She tapes everything, Trump asked. Good to know. And it goes on to deal with some of her problems and this 1864 all but complete ban on abortion. Spokesman Jason Miller said Carrie Lake is a smart and fearless leader who will win in Arizona and help us flip the Senate to Republican control. Carrie's opponent, Ruben Gallego, is an open borders radical, bad on inflation, soft on terrorists and crime. Carrie Lake has also hired Jason Miller to help her campaign. All right, I gotta just take a couple minutes now to deal with the Christie Nome fiasco. I've stayed away from this just because it's so uncomfortable to talk about. And talk about somebody who wounded herself, pun intended, and has now all but been eliminated. I mean, she's been totally eliminated as a potential Trump VP pick, the governor of South Dakota. There's even questions about, you know, her political future, even though she's not going to be considered for the ticket. So she writes in a book, in a memoir, that she came to hate her dog and shot the dog to death. And also, for good measure, shot a goat that she was keeping. Now, why on earth would you do this? And would you disclose this yourself? I mean, I've heard theories about it was going to come out anyway. She had a preempt, but you don't usually do that in the book because a book takes time to get out. Maybe she thought it would show, toughen her image. What a spectacular miscalculation. I love dogs. What do you mean? I mean, like, you know, this makes Mitt Romney merely putting a dog on the roof of his car for a road trip seem quaint. You know, what the hell's wrong with that? The dog didn't complain. I just can't imagine. I mean, it's such a sickening thing. But also, and it's been 4 days now, and she's still trying to explain it away. And it's been the subject of memes and mockery and, you know, attacks all over the web. And she's saying, well, you know, I didn't do anything illegal, and the dog deserved it. I mean, I don't know. Did this really even happen? And if it did, or even if it didn't, why would you say you shot your dog? All right.
Hey, let's pause right there. The buzz meter continues right after this.
Let me move on to number four. The latest offer by Israel to try to get to at least a temporary truce in Gaza is the Israelis will accept fewer hostages to be freed instead of demanding 40. Including women, older people, those who are seriously ill. Israel will settle for only 33, and that's because of a belief that some of the 40 have already died in captivity. Tony Blinken said Israel's made an extraordinarily generous offer and that only Hamas stood in the way of a deal. British Foreign Minister David Cameron also backed this. Egypt's foreign minister said it was hopeful. So there's been a rising of expectations, but I don't know. Hamas has shot down every single deal that Israel has offered. Because, I mean, I guess it would still keep some hostages, so it wouldn't give up all its leverage. But no matter what it is, it finds a way to say no, because Israel still would have the power, after however long this truce lasts, to invade Rafah, and that would mean a lot more civilian casualties. Meanwhile, Axios reporting that the International Criminal Court is being warned by members of Congress in both parties that arrest warrants for senior Israeli officials will be met with U.S. retaliation. Bibi Netanyahu personally urged President Biden to intervene to help prevent these warrants. The ICC has been investigating allegations of war crimes against both the Israeli military and the Palestinian militia groups. It's called Hamas. Going back to 2014, White House declined to comment, but said the ICC has no jurisdiction in this situation. We do not support its investigation. Mike Johnson, the speaker, calling the warrants disgraceful and lawless. All right. Story number five. Lawyers for Hunter Biden say they plan to sue Fox News imminently. Haven't sued yet, but leaked the story to NBC News, which has been riding it pretty hard. NBC News somehow obtained, air quotes, a letter dated April 23rd, putting Fox on notice for litigation claims arising from the network's alleged, quote, conspiracy and subsequent actions to defame Mr. Biden, that is, Hunter Biden, and paint him in a false light, the unlicensed commercial exploitation of his image, name, and likeness, and the unlawful publication of hacked, intimate images of him. You can argue that last point, not about the hacking. I mean, obviously the laptop was hacked by somebody, but this all became public. And remember, it was the New York Times and the Washington Post that belatedly vouched for the authenticity of that laptop. So NBC says the earlier letter was sent to Fox's counsel 2 weeks ago. Network asked for more time to respond. Hadn't responded by Friday evening. So then came the leak. The plan has been in the works for over a year. Lawyer for Hunter saying, Fox has relentlessly attacked Hunter Biden for 5 years and made him a caricature in order to boost ratings and for its financial gain. The recent indictment of FBI informant Smirnoff has exposed the conspiracy of disinformation that has been fueled by Fox, enabled by their paid agents, and monetized by the Fox enterprise. Okay? Today, Fox put out a statement. Hunter Biden's lawyers have belatedly chosen to publicly attack Fox News' constitutionally protected coverage regarding their client. Mr. Biden is a public figure who has been the subject of investigations by both Department of Justice and Congress, has been indicted by two different U.S. attorney's offices in California and Delaware, and has admitted to multiple incidents of wrongdoing consistent with the First Amendment. Fox News has accurately covered these highly publicized events, as well as the subsequent indictment of an FBI informant who was the source of certain claims made about Mr. Biden. Now, if I had been asked to give my comments, they would have been very similar. Hunter Biden is facing a criminal trial after pleading to a couple of misdemeanors and that being thrown out. This has to do with gun charges and tax charges. So that's a story that has to be covered. Every news organization on the planet has covered it. And as far as the FBI informant, it has been covered on Fox. I've covered it plenty. It's a total embarrassment, but Fox didn't invent this guy or the indictment. Smirnoff was indicted by DOJ for making up false claims about Hunter Biden. And it was Jim Comer's House Oversight Committee that relied on him as a source for a lot of these allegations and then had to back off to some degree. And every news organization covered that, both when Comer made the claims and when, you know, again, he's entitled to presumption of innocence, but he's been indicted. So I'll leave it at that. But I certainly wanted to give you the latest on this. Of course, Hunter Biden could have just gone ahead and sued rather than, you know, I guess you stretch out the story and you get your own spin on it. And I'll close with this. OAN, One America News, has retracted a March 27th article entitled Whistleblower, Avenatti Alleged Cohn-Daniels Affair Since 2006, pre-2016 Trump extortion plan. This is OAN's own statement. It's taking it down from all sites, removing it from all social media. This retraction is part of a settlement reached with Michael Cohen. Avenatti, you remember, Michael Avenatti, now serving a very long prison term for lots of charges, including defrauding Stormy Daniels, his client, and other companies. Mr. Avenatti has denied making the allegations. OAN apologizes to Mr. Cohen for any harm the publication may have caused him. OAN goes on to say, or the write-up goes on to say, that the settlement doesn't include any money paid to Cohen. The article, quoting a source, falsely claimed that Mr. Cohen and Ms. Daniels were having an affair since 2006, and that according to a source, quoting again, the whole hush money scheme was cooked up by Cohen to extort the Trump Organization before the 2016 elections. These statements are not accurate, and it goes on. We report, you decide, right? Thank you for bearing with me on this, I think, one of my most important podcasts. I always appreciate your time. We'll see you tomorrow with more BuzzMeter.
Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts and via Apple Podcasts, and Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on Amazon Music.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Ben Domenech, Fox News contributor and editor of the Transom.com daily newsletter. And I'm inviting you to join a conversation every week. It's the Ben Domenech Podcast.
Subscribe and listen now by going to FoxNewsPodcasts.com.